Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
All right, everybody, we are live for a special DK Pittsburgh Sports Ask Anything post-game edition for the Pittsburgh Steelers loss to the Los Angeles Chargers. I almost said San Diego. The Los Angeles Chargers, 41-37. I am Eddie Provident. With me is Zach Smith. Smitty.
Yo, what's going on? You are way too fired up for a loss right now. That's all I'm going to tell you.
It's been a long day, man.
I know.
Listen, that defense isn't the only crap I've had to deal with. I've had a plumber at my house for the last 6 hours today, so it's been a lot of fun. I've been dealing with crap on the Steelers side. I've been dealing with it at my house. It's been a rough day on and off the field if you're a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Just to kind of go over what happened, Steelers came back from 17 points in the fourth quarter to tie the game up at 34-34, only to have the defense let up, a 51-yard, 52-yard, something like the 50-something yard touchdown pass.
Vintage Mike Williams touchdown. That's pretty much what he does. Yeah.
So, and then the offense just couldn't get it done. Ben Roethlisberger was sacked at a 3rd and 29 after the delay of game, went to 3rd and 30 a lot. And it wasn't, you know, just wasn't going to get it done when you're backed up like that. It is what it is. I appreciate the effort, especially from the offense today. The defense was severely understaffed. No TJ Watt, no Minkah Fitzpatrick, no Joe Hayden. Already down Stephon Tuitt, already down Tyson Alualu. So you've got five starters on the defensive side of the ball out. I wasn't expecting much from the defensive side of the ball today, but I think even this was bad. Before we get into questions, before I let you go, Zach, ask your questions in the comments section. Wherever you're watching, we're live on Facebook, we're live on YouTube, we are live on Twitter. Throw your questions in there. We will get to them as quick as we can. We're going to try to go for about 20 minutes, maybe a half hour here, and try to get some, you know, get some good Steelers talk in. But Zach, what's your thoughts on the game? I gave you my quick synopsis of just frustration. Where are you at with it?
Yeah, I mean, we came into this game thinking that we knew what the game plan was going to be with them running the football. It turns out Najee Harris gets 12 carries, which you do not want to see against a team in the Chargers that is dead last in terms of allowing teams to run the football. Now, game script was not favorable to the Steelers being able to establish the run, and I do understand that. However, you know, even when there were situations for them to run the ball. And I don't know, is this on Ben? Is it like a lot of his decision RPO stuff? Because they've been very vocal about that being more part of the offense and putting it more in the quarterback's hands. So I don't know, but obviously I don't love that. But as a whole, the offense, of course, they play their best football game when the defense is so undermanned that it doesn't matter because they couldn't have stopped anybody today. Well, Eddie, what school is it? What high school is it that you or the film coordinator for
West Mifflin?
Yeah, they wouldn't have stopped West Mifflin's offense tonight.
They might have stopped West Mifflin's offense. Maybe that Steel Valley 2016 team that I coached, the Mercy Boys. But let's get into some questions here. I'm just going to start at the top and work our way down. Tyler says you two are hideous. Tyler just lost his spot as co-host for Around the 412. We're looking for a new co-host now for Around the 412. You can put your application in. Yeah, with Smitty. Anything, Anthony McFarland, Zach Banner, will they ever play? Great question, Meatwad.
Yeah, I think the thing with Zach Banner is, right, you're just like waiting for one of the offensive line to have like that poor of a, or a tackle specifically, to have that poor of a performance where it allows you to make the switch, because they don't want to mess with anything other than that. Like, no one on the offensive line. Okay, Chooks did have a really nice block getting out on the Pat Freiermuth touchdown.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
Today. But like Zach Banner, they gave him a 2-year contract after he tore that ACL, like thinking, you know, they know that he had to go through the rehab and everything like that. He's back. He should be in the lineup. I mean, yeah, right now he's just collecting a paycheck for pretty much nothing.
Yeah. Let's get to a little bit more like current today stuff.
Well, see, I do want to say they mentioned Anthony McFarland in that too, though. Okay. So I wanted to just say, like, the thing with Anthony McFarland is he doesn't provide anything special teams wise, whereas like Benny Snell does play special teams.
Right.
Kalen Blage does play a little special teams. I don't get me wrong. I would rather, much rather, see Anthony McFarland in there, because I think
you and
there's
me both,
anybody
buddy.
On the roster that has a shot to be RB2, like a legit guy that can give Najee Harris some breathers, it is Anthony McFarland. Not that I know that he is that guy or isn't that guy, but I'd like to find out. But he's not even getting a shot.
All right, we got Angelo Bello says, what's more infuriating with this team, the injuries on defense or Matthew Canada's play calling? Matthew, I want to spend some time on this one because I have feelings, but I'll let you go first.
Is this Matt Canada's mom behind a burner account? Matthew Canada.
Matthew. The first name came out, man.
Yeah, that's full first name. So for me, it's just weird because it seems like Canada completely changes his play calling when they get into the red zone. You know, how are you going to ride Najee Harris to the ground, run his tires off, but when you're inside the 5-yard line, you don't want to give him the football. It's just Matt Canada. Listen, I understand that he doesn't have like the perfect offense for what he wants to do with a 39-year-old immobile quarterback. But he just seems way over his head in terms of what he's able to scheme up against an NFL defense, especially in the red zone.
Yeah, I was so excited for the potential that Matt Canada brought to this football team after watching what he did at Pitt, all of the creativity that he had there, you know, as the, you know, we thought that we were seeing some Matt Canada football sprinkled in earlier in the season last year. And it turns out that, I mean, this is, you know, I think Yinzers are notorious for saying this is just Randy Fichtner 2.0. And it really, listen, man, I don't care if you're down 30. You don't give Najee Harris the football 12 times before the – I mean, they were down 17 in the fourth quarter. They weren't down 17 at the end of the half, okay? 12 rushes for Najee Harris. 12 against the worst rush defense in football. What are you doing? And this is my – at what point in time, Zach, is he held accountable for this? Because this is game in and game out now. This is every time the Steelers tie or every time the Steelers lose, they abandon the run game and they get pass happy. We had Mason Rudolph throwing the football 50 times last week, and we had Ben Roethlisberger throwing the ball 44 times this week. And I realized that some of that was in the third and fourth quarter when they needed to really dig out of a hole, especially the fourth quarter. But 44 times on a dude that didn't even see the practice field. He flew to Los Angeles from his home. This is ridiculous, man. This isn't like it's not even funny anymore. It's just ridiculous.
Listen, though, I feel like he's going to be able to keep falling back, or, you know, defenders of him are going to be able to keep falling back on the personnel when you look at the offensive line and say that they are the reason that they're not able to tote the rock more and that they're not running it in goal to go situations. I really don't know. I don't want to stray too far away from the conversation here, but as I'm saying that, like, I'm just thinking about how bad Kendrick Green was again tonight. Like, I just don't know. Maybe the answer is to draft a center and have him play guard, and then you have like a pretty solid, because I think he could be a really good guard. I think they were, you know, in over their heads thinking they're going to just draft a guy that had 4 starts at center in college and plug and play him. But he is just way in over his head right now as well.
Yeah, David Jamison.
There's David Jamison. That's the next co-host around the forum.
There you go, man. Why is Green snapping the ball like it's coming out of a cannon? That is a great question, David. I think a lot of people would love to know the answer to that. I put Daniel Hayes up here because he said not gonna. Or he says not gonna have to disagree, and then he elaborates. They had to get rid of the run game because Harris was bound to get hurt. Then he did. He almost had his knee blown out.
That was a disgusting looking tackle.
Yeah, I get it, man. I get it. But that's what's working for your offense right now. That Najee Harris is what is working for this offense. Okay. That is what they're able to get these slants and the stuff going down the middle of the field. It's all working because people are worried about Najee Harris getting the football. And when you don't give Najee Harris the football, you end up getting into situations where the defenses could just sit back and prey on it. They can go after the quarterback, or they could just wait for, you know, for these not Ben doesn't have the, you know, I don't think he has as weak of an arm as everyone said he has at the beginning of the season, but he definitely doesn't have the arm that he used to have. And people could just sit there and wait on these routes because they know that they're coming. You've got to keep pounding the rock with Najee. I don't care, man. Like, I that's what he's getting paid for. He's getting paid to run the football. He wants to run the football. Listen to every single time he's in front of a microphone, he wants to run the football. He wants the ball more. He wants the ball in every situation you can give it to him. Give him the football.
So as far as like this comment specifically, so if you're going to argue like game script, I 100% get that. Eddie and I were actually talking about that before we pressed the go live thing. And that's what I was saying is they couldn't really establish a run much because of game script kind of making them go pass heavy. But if like your argument is going to be as far as getting hurt, I mean, look at who they're putting the game in the hands of then, a 39-year-old quarterback who had a major elbow surgery just over a year ago and didn't practice at all this week and is dealing with the injuries that he is already this year. So, I mean, that can't be the reason.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Let's move to the defensive side of the ball before I have a heart attack.
This is the best.
What's going to set me over for the heart attack. Rick Schwartz says, why couldn't the Steelers contain Herbert running when the guys like Jackson so much and seem, or when they see guys like Jackson so much and seem to contain him? Okay. I'll be honest with you. I don't think that they thought they had to worry about it as much. And Herbert exploited that. I think that's where it's at with it. You got anything more you want to add to that?
I mean, we've had this conversation how many times? I feel like, you know, as far as like, I feel like this is why Steeler fans don't appreciate Lamar Jackson as much as everybody else, because what Lamar Jackson looks like against the Steelers. So I 100% get where this question is coming from in terms of the way they've been able to contain him. With a guy like Justin Herbert, I mean, yes, he can run, but I really think that the emphasis was on keeping everything in front of them, not letting them get behind you. You know, Mike Williams was ton of explosive plays in the first month of the season last month, really wasn't making those plays like the game sealing touchdown that he had tonight. But I think that was the point of emphasis. Why they didn't adjust and have a QB spy on him in the second half, I don't know, because this was a game long thing. It wasn't like just a couple times where he broke contain and was able to get away. This was going on all night where he was getting to the second, third levels of the defense.
Yeah. And again, problems with the run game, you know, like the, like when you factor in what Herbert was able to do, and again, that's quarterback scrambling, but then they couldn't contain Eckler either. I know he did a lot out of the pass game, but again, it's just more of the same problems. Bad tackling, bad gap control, middle linebackers aren't playing great.
Schobert had that really nice play on that fourth down stop to get the Steelers the ball back, where the Steelers briefly did take the lead off the leg of Chris Boswell. Go figure. Once again, he deserves some love. I really don't know what to say about this defensive performance, because it wasn't totally unexpected. I mean, I don't want to make excuses for them, but I guess the silver lining of this whole game for me is just that the offense finally broke 30 points, and what we were missing on the defensive side of the football, you get those guys back, you might have something there.
I hope so, man.
But here's another thing that I wanted to say. You mentioned the missed tackles. It's just crazy to me. Like, we knew that there was going to be turnover regression coming from, like, they could never keep up what happened in 19 and 20 on the defensive side of the football turnover-wise. But, like, the jump that they have this year in terms of missed tackles across the board, literally everybody is missing tackles this year. Edmonds had a 2% missed tackle rate last year. It's up to like 11%, 13%. Like, Cam Hayward's missing tackles, TJ Watt's missing tackles, everybody.
Yeah. And on that, on the Herbert thing, and I think that this plays into the missed tackles as well, Smitty. One thing that the Chargers did on the stretch, they knew our defense would come out energized, so they would run bootlegs and screens. That's from Jeff Kirby. I think that's a great point. I think that the Chargers really exploited the fact that this was going to be a defense that was over-pursuing things. Normally, when you get a young, inexperienced defense, that is one of the tendencies that you see is over-pursuit. They're trying to make that tackle. They're trying to get there first. They're trying to get there in swarms. And so those boots, those the little scrambles by the quarterbacks when there's over pursuit, the screens, we saw a lot of screen game from the Chargers today, a couple that worked really well for them. That's what happens when you over pursue those, you know, those guys kind of, they tend to slip away and get into the open field a lot easier, you know? So that, I think that was part of it as well. Timothy Hemis brings up the point. This is the one that I've been hitting this drum for a few weeks now. The middle linebackers are missing Alualu. The middle linebackers are missing Alualu and Stephon Tuitt right now, man. I don't think people really look. This is I'm going to preface this. This has nothing to do with defending Devin Bush, because Devin Bush has been bad, real bad. Mm-hmm. But when you're playing the middle linebacker position, it's a lot easier to play the middle linebacker position when you have a very good defensive line in front of you that eats those blocks. That they have sound. We talked about gap control a couple minutes ago. Gap control is key for the defensive line so that the middle linebackers aren't trying to shed blocks to get the tackles. When the defensive line is not playing at its A game, it's almost impossible for the middle linebackers to play their A game.
Yeah, if those offensive linemen are climbing to the second level and getting hands on Devin Bush, he's not breaking off of it. Like, no. That's not what he's supposed to be doing either. I mean, listen, he was a downhill thumper at Michigan, and we haven't seen him do that since, you know, that ACL injury, obviously. And is he playing a little bit tentative? And is that, you know, part of the problem? Is it as much mental as it is physical? It very well could be. But I think that Devin Bush's problems aren't just Devin Bush.
Yeah, I agree with you. And, you know, Mosto says D-line is getting gashed every game now. Seattle's where it started. Yeah, that Seattle game was bad. The second half of the Chicago game was bad. Three quarters of the Detroit game was terrible. We're just seeing it over and over again that the defensive line, is just getting gashed left and right, and it's not good. Ed Fromm and Botter, Hazelwood guy. Shout out to my Hazelwood crew. What do you think of the call not kicking the field goal in the first half, bringing the score, Chargers 7 to Steelers 6 would have been an ideal situation. I like going for it. I hate the play call.
That's
where I'm at with it.
And I think any time that had they gotten it, no one questions it. You know, hindsight is 20/20.
And that's why I say I like the play. I like the call. But again, play calling on the offensive side is words that use on family-friendly YouTube channels.
Yeah, I mean, not even so much. The fourth down call was not good. I mean,
no, it was terrible.
So when you have Najee run out and go line up out wide, and then you have Pat come across the formation, everybody knows what's happening on that play.
Everybody.
I've tried that so many times with Juju, with Pat. He scored a touchdown against Cincinnati doing that exact same play. But what bothers me more is the previous play. If your plan is to go for it on fourth anyway, why are you throwing a fade to the back of the end zone on third down? I mean,
and then when they do run it, who do they run it to? Chase Claypool on an end around. You have not. I said this last week on my podcast. You have Najee Harris. He's one of the best running backs in football. Statistically, look at it. He's one of the best running backs in football. He's the best rookie back in football. You have Najee Harris, who's 6'2", 240 pounds. He's 5% body fat. He's a freak of nature. When he gets going downhill, he's almost impossible to get to the ground. And you're not giving him the ball inside the 5-yard line. Make it make sense. Please, somebody make that make sense. Tell me why. I don't understand football as well as Matt Canada does. So somebody make that make sense for me.
Yeah, they did the one time after Claypool drew a defensive pass interference in the end zone, and they were literally on the goal line. They handed it to Najee Harris, and he just jumped over the formation to score a touchdown. But, yeah, I mean, again, to answer the question, though, I did like going for it.
I did, too.
Especially, I know that at the time, you could be on both sides of this coin, right? Like, you know, take the points with the way that you're going to need every single point with the way that the defense is looking like. At the same time, that's why I'm thinking they should have gone for it, is because I'm thinking we're going to need all the points that we can get.
I agree with you 100%, man. I couldn't have said it better. Jeremy Scott Morrison says, where are the coaching adjustments? Great question. Still no answer for the overloaded offensive line. Still running the same jet sweep from last year at the goal line. There's so much tape on this stuff, but no adjustments. Listen, the Detroit Lions game last week was a case study in not making a defensive adjustment from Keith Butler. Everybody saw what was happening in that game, right? Everybody knew they were overloading the side of the offensive line, and then they were running to that side. They were going strong, heavy, six offensive line. You know, they were going with a tight end, extra tackle, and they were running to that side, and they were doing it the whole game.
And they ran for over 200 yards.
And Keith Butler didn't make the adjustment until the fourth quarter. And now we're seeing the same kind of thing from Matt Canada. Okay, this isn't working. Passing the ball 45 times, 50 times a game isn't working. So maybe I should run the ball 30 times a game. Maybe I should keep pounding the rock with my really good running back. Nah, we're going to keep throwing the ball. We're not going to make the adjustment. Jeremy, that is the million-dollar question with this football team. Where are the coaching adjustments? And listen, I am a Mike Tomlin apologist. I love Mike Tomlin. I think he's one of the top three quarterbacks in the NFL, or coaches in the NFL. Yeah. Hey, you know what? Maybe there's our future quarterback, right? No, he's one of the top three quarterback. I did it again. Now you're in my head, Smitty. One of the top three coaches in the NFL. One of the best, I think, of this era, no doubt. But at what point in time does he get some blame for these offensive and defensive coordinators? Because this is painful, man. The guys on the broadcast team are constantly pointing out all of the stuff that's happening, right? I go through Twitter and all of the Twitter experts, you know, they're all figuring out what's going on.
That's how bad it is that the Twitter experts actually look like experts.
Why can't the offensive and defensive coordinators that are making more than six figures figure it out if we all can see it?
I mean, that's always been Tomlin's thing, at least in my opinion, was like, we know how great of a leader he is, you know, how he can control a locker room and everything like that, and how much the players respect him and how he can get them up for any game. Like, for example, tonight, they have no business even being in this game, but they are right till the very end. But his shortcomings, I think, have always been in the coordinators. You know, he doesn't have a coaching tree, and especially like on the offensive side for me, because I know that he has a hand in everything defensively. I think with him not being, you know, the greatest offensive mind, that's why it's so important for him to have, you know, a really strong, good offensive coordinator that can call plays. And, you know, whether that's Tomlin or more so the organization not investing in that, and that's, you know, a whole separate conversation itself, is them always looking for an internal solution so they don't have to go spend money, real money, on an offensive coordinator. You know, I don't know. I don't know where the blame falls in that. But to me, that's always been, you know, the biggest thing for me with Tomlin is the coordinators on his staff.
Are you good at I'm going to ask you a question now. We kind of touched on this a bit. Are you good with using Ben Roethlisberger the way they did today, off of no practice and no preparation whatsoever? And again, I understand that a lot of those passes and passing yards came in the fourth quarter, but I still think they overused the passing game in this game today. I still think that there wasn't enough balance, especially with a guy like Ben who was coming off of the week that he came off of. Do you have any, do you agree, disagree, think I'm making too much out of that?
It's tough, because especially like for one game, like specifically for today, I will say no. However, like as far as the lack of balance season long, I have more of an issue with. I think that, like, again, I keep saying game script and everything like that, but like the way that this game kind of set up for the Steelers, it kind of had to happen this way, in my opinion, for them to be able to get back into the ball game. at the same time, it was kind of, not to stray away from your initial question, but if you're going to pass, it's kind of weird how they tried to attack this Chargers secondary, because the Chargers secondary, they play a lot of too high safety. They want to keep everything in front of you. They want you to try to test them by taking shots. And for whatever reason, the Steelers obliged and tried to take shots down the field, something they really haven't done all year. So the utilization, I think, was odd, and that's what I'll say about it. As far as Ben passing 45 times, I don't want that to continue. But for today's game specifically, I think it needed to happen for them to have any chance.
We'll stay on the Matt Canada thing.
hey, we could have a whole show just talking about
the Matt Canada show. I'm assuming he means, do you think Canada is trying to run plays for a quarterback that is mobile, and why don't they just ask Ben what he is comfortable with doing? I think those questions and those things are happening behind closed doors. Got to remember today's game plan. Ben, I'm sure he was, I know for a fact from what Mason Rudolph said this week in his media availability, that Ben was having direct conversations with Sullivan, the quarterback's coach, Mike Sullivan, not the Penguins head coach, the Steelers quarterback coach. I know that they were in constant contact this week. And I know that Ben was, kind of in meetings through Zoom here and there, but he wasn't, obviously not at the facility because of the COVID protocol. I think that this week's game plan was made for Mason Rudolph, because that's who they assumed was going to be the starter until, Ben got his clearance to play. So I don't think that this week, I think that this game plan kind of went out the window a bit, and they just kind of did what they had to do. As far as the rest of the season, though, no, I don't think if you're Matt Canada, I don't think that you're going to try to run plays for Ben that would normally work for a mobile quarterback. I don't even think Matt Canada's that dumb. I hope not.
Well, here's what upsets me is, because all off season, like training camp, preseason, we heard about how Matt Canada was coming in, and all four quarterbacks, Ben, Rudolph, Haskins, and Dobbs, he had a 10 play opening drive for the first half and second half, as well as a game plan put into place for any one of those guys so they could be the most comfortable, almost building an offense around each one of them. So regardless of who had to play, they would feel the most comfortable and have an ecosystem, if you will, built around
them.
Good
word. It's good for you. That.
But so for me, I can't see that being the case. Like, Matt Canada is an offensive coordinator. Your job is to build the offense around the quarterback, not try to fit that quarterback, that square peg into a round hole. Like, that's not the way it should be. He should be building the offense around what he has at his disposal, not the other way around.
Yeah. Mr. Yaya, how about Ben calls his own plays like Peyton Manning had full control of the line? Would love to see that. I mean, at this point in time, what do you have to lose?
Hey, listen, backyard Ben. I mean, you go back to last year. That
sometimes
comeback
that's best
against
Ben,
Baltimore.
Man.
Yeah, I think that, we're not going to know for sure, but I think a lot of times tonight it looked like they were kind of just throwing that out the window and just letting Ben do his thing at the line of scrimmage and see what he saw.
Yeah. Double HH. Ben couldn't save himself from the interior line being sliced through so easily. Can't scheme that.
That last drive was awful. Joe Hague got bullied. And, that's a guy, I understand he's playing guard and not tackle now, but there were times, where he was playing tackle where it seemed like he was like the saving grace for the run game. You look at like the Packers game and other times where he had to come in throughout the season. He looked like maybe he would be their best tackle option because of what he was doing as a run blocker. But yeah, he got absolutely exposed on that last drive. They moved him into the interior.
Joe Hague got bullied like Zach Smith as a 10-year-old in the McDonald's play zone.
What a comparison.
Yeah. We'll go, we got time for maybe like two more questions. Also, we'll stick with the offensive line, go back to the Hazelwood guys. All season, I feel Ben has been pounded. What can be done? With the depth that they have at offensive line or lack thereof, I don't know, man. I do know. I'm going to keep repeating myself. What do you think I'm going to say, Smitty? They should give the football to Najee Harris. I mean, like, if your quarterback's getting sacked and running around for his life, maybe give the football to the running back that has a chance to be an all Pro Bowl running back this year. I don't know. Maybe. I think it might work.
It stinks because I think the only shot at protecting him is probably taking playmakers or could be playmakers off the field in order to provide him some extra protection. You know what I mean? Like maybe we're not able to use Najee Harris as catching pass out of the backfield because he has to stay in and pass pro, or, you know, putting Zach Gentry on the field more, just a pass block, Pat Freiermuth having to stay in line to pass block.
Maybe start Zach Banner over a rookie Dan Moore Jr.
We'll see. You know, and here's the thing too, like similarly with Banner, with Dan Moore, as I wanted to say about Bush, I actually forgot, so I can say this about both of them. They're not playing well, but coaches are also not putting them in positions to succeed. Like, so real quick for Devin Bush, like there's no reason he should be covering Austin Eckler one-on-one. Like you're putting him in position to lose right then and there. Dan Moore Jr., why is he on an island by himself against the likes of Joey Bosa, going back to Myles Garrett, like these all-world pass rushers as a fourth-round rookie?
Yeah. David Bersicki, sorry if I'm missing your name up there, man. So he can gain 3 yards, talking about Najee Harris. Hey, guess what 3 times 3 is? That's 9. That puts you at 4th-and-1, or if you go by his average yards per carry this season, 3.7 yards. 3.7 yards 3 times. Guess what that gets you? A Pittsburgh Steelers first down.
Play the audio.
Yeah, I wish I had it. but listen, man, I pound the rock with Najee. It's that simple, right? That's the offensive strategy. That's what it needs to be. Ben throws 25 to 30 times a game. Najee runs the ball 25 to 30 times a game. That's what's going to get you wins with this football team. This offensive line is much better in run blocking than it is in pass protection. Get the big guys moving downfield. Get Najee Harris moving downfield and move the ball. Make things happen. That will open up pockets of the field for Ben to get the ball downfield. I know this is like football 101, but that's what it comes down to. We'll do one more, and I think we'll call it a night. And I'm going to give you I'm going to give you a softball here, Smitty.
Okay.
Tyler Weeks says, go donate to Rocking Around the 412 #, for the kids. Listen, I'll give you your shine here, but I'm going to say this. And I'm going to get really serious and a little tiny bit sentimental as we end this show. Zach Smith, my co-host for tonight, and Tyler Weeks, his co-host on Around the 412, have been doing Rocking Around the 412, a Christmas charity that they put on themselves. 100% of the proceeds goes towards Christmas gifts and food for families who can't afford Christmas. They've already raised on their GoFundMe over $5,500. Last year, what, you guys raised $5,000?
Yeah, 5,300. So, yeah, this year.
So they've already surpassed this year. Mm-hmm. And listen, they could be doing a lot of things with their time. You know, I know that they're just, just amateur podcasters, but they're doing something good for the community. So if you're listening to this right now, if you listen to this later on Megaphone or on YouTube as a recording, definitely consider throwing a couple bucks. You can find the GoFundMe URL on the Around the 412 Twitter page. It's the pinned tweet. But they're doing really good stuff, man. And it's a great cause. And, I can't say enough about, you know, these two guys and what they're doing for their community. I'll hand it over to you to kind of fill the gaps, man.
Yeah. So for anybody that's not familiar with Around the 412, we did recently this year join the DK Pittsburgh Sports Podcast Network, but we've been doing the podcast since 2017. In 2018, you know, I was just like, man, we have like a decent bit of following here. Let's just see if we can do something with it, you know, good for Christmas. And so I started the GoFundMe that year. And I think we raised about $1,500 that first year. And we didn't have like any connections yet in the community or anything really like that. What we did the first year was actually different than what we've been doing the next three. The first year we found a 24/7 pediatric center in Aliquippa. So these kids require 24/7. They require 24/7 care because of the condition that they're in. So we bought like a bunch of sensory toys. We had like, they gave us a list and everything like that. Got a bunch of stuff off Amazon. And even after we bought literally everything that they had on the list, we still had $500 left over. So I just literally wrote them a check for $500 for them to do whatever with. The last 3 years now, we've literally gone and found families in the 412 and 724 areas to be able to provide Christmas for. And when I say provide Christmas for, I mean every single penny that is donated goes to Christmas gifts for the kids, and also a gift card to whatever their local grocery store might be for them to be able to go and buy groceries to provide that holiday meal. You know, these things are such, like, for you and I and for a lot of people listening, there's just such, like, minuscule things. They're just, like, commonplace. We're about to celebrate Thanksgiving this week and sit down and have a meal and think nothing of it. That's not that way for everybody.
Yeah.
You know, we are all very, very blessed. Tyler and I have been very blessed our entire lives, and we recognize that it's not that way for everybody. So yeah, with us raising the amount that we have this year, we've been able to raise over $15,000 since starting
total.
So, since its inception in 2018.
Now, one more question for you before we get out of here. Have you figured out, have you found the families who are going to benefit from this yet? Or are we still looking for families?
There's a couple. So if you guys know of families, definitely you can reach out to us at Around the 412. You can email us. Listen, I know even if you yourself are a family, I know that like a lot of people struggle with asking for help, but that's what, like, listen, just reach out to me privately. No one has to hear about, like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't feel embarrassed about it for one.
Yep.
Because no one knows, I could be in a position someday in the future where I need help. So when I'm in a position to provide that help, I absolutely love to do it. I love that Tyler and I are able to do this every single year. There are a couple families. I don't want to get into their stories or anything like that. I will say that one of them is a family that we've helped every single year. So you guys have already seen, we try to put out pictures and videos so you guys know where the money is going, each year, of them opening gifts and stuff and like the surprises on their face. But yeah, one family is a repeat family. They've been there every single year. But if you guys know of a family, you can definitely reach out to us, because we're going to be able to provide Christmas for at least five or six families this year. Hopefully
awesome.
More. Shout out to Morgan and Sam from Yinzers for dyeing their hair for the cause. Eddie, I'm pretty sure, is going to do something as well. And hey, I don't know if Chad's still in here, but I think Chad owes us something.
Yeah, I'll put it out there. This is what I'll do, because it was complicated the last time I made this comment. So I'm going to put it out here on the live Q&A so everybody hears it. The goal on GoFundMe is $7,500. You're at about $5,600 right now, $5,700, give or take. If they hit the $7,500 mark, I'm shaving the beard. So $7,500, the beard's gone. So let's get them there. I think my wife has a rooting interest against charity, but yeah,
hey,
that's
talking about great things that local people are doing and everything like that. I see you wearing the Pittsburgh Clothing Company hat.
Yes, sir.
I'm not, but I got mine sitting right here. So shout out to Zach and Tim at Pittsburgh Clothing Company.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, listen, we have definitely gone over our time that we wanted to do, but that's cool. We had a lot of great questions, a lot of good interaction from everybody listening. You can catch Steelers Today. I believe we're going to try to get a Tuesday one out there, get back to doing that. We had some craziness going on these past couple weeks, so it's been a little sketchy getting those out. But, you know, we're just keep in tune, keep in touch with the website, with the Facebook, the Twitter, YouTube channel. We've got all the content coming out. We really appreciate everybody that watches and listens and you know, supports everything that DK Pittsburgh Sports is doing. It's a fun place to work. It's a fun place to be. And it's because of all of the listeners, viewers, subscribers, and everybody that makes it a fun time. So we appreciate everyone out there. This has been the DK Pittsburgh Sports question and answer live ask anything. We will catch you guys next time. Take care. And that's it.